from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
It's been like a dream, honestly. You know, a lot of it doesn't feel real, but it's been fun. You know, I'm really proud of just the way these guys have played, the way they've gone about their work, and just the way they've competed, you know, in those games. It's been different in the dugout, and I just want to build off of that. I told them, just keep going, just keep fighting, keep playing like that, and I think good things will happen.
That is Grady Sizemore. He is the interim manager for the Chicago White Sox. Folks know what trade Grady Sizemore was in, right? It's one of the all-time trades. I think of it very often because in late June of 2002, the Montreal Expos decided they wanted Bartolo Colon from Cleveland. And, oh, wait a minute. Do I have that wrong? Oh, yeah, no, here it is. So, yeah, the Expos decided they wanted Bartolo Colon for that stretch run. And, Sean, see what Bartolo Colon did for the Expos in 2002, will ya? And how long he was there. Because the general manager in Cleveland asked for a package of prospects. And the prospects he asked for, he got. One of them was Cliff Lee, who went on to an unbelievable career as a Cy Young winner and more with Cleveland and eventually with the Phillies. One of them was Brandon Phillips, who went on to a tremendous career as a second baseman and hitter for Cleveland and later for Cincinnati. And one of them was Grady Sizemore, who looked like a five-tool center field MVP caliber ball player as a young member of the Cleveland Indians. I mean, an outrageous prospect haul for Bartolo Colon to the Expos in 2002.
So Bartolo Colon in 2002 was 10-4 with a 3.31 ERA, pitched about over 117 innings.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right.
It's pretty good. And then that was it for, was he a rental?
Yeah, he was gone after that. He went to the White Sox, and then he was with the A's for a couple years before going back to Boston.
So it was right before Bartolo came to the White Sox, and had that whole thing where he disappeared to Mexico for a while. Yeah. There was a lot that went on.
Weird.
Remember that? Yeah, there's a lot that went on. But anyway, how's that for a rental? Brandon Phillips, Cliff Lee, and Grady Sizemore. Unbelievable. But anyway, Grady Sizemore, the manager of the White Sox for now. You'll hear from Chris Getz and from Craig Counsell about managing and more coming up a little bit later this hour. But let's take some of these phone calls as we wrap up talking about these games, the White Sox and the Cubs. This is Guy in Hazelcrest on 670 The Score. What's up, Guy?
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Wonderful. There's a couple things I wanted to point out. One is more of a pile on the Sox, but it's just so hard watching them play. When the Cubs scored their first run, I mean, that was just a ridiculous play. There's no way that run should have scored. And it's just hard to watch a team when, like, not only are they bad, but they're just not doing any of the fundamental things right. And that's hard to watch, but that's not really what I wanted to.
Hey, Guy, let me comment on that though, because you couldn't be more right. And it's been that way for a long time. And even when they were good a couple of years ago and got their ass kicked by the Astros in the postseason, we knew that they weren't doing fundamental things well. And that's a product of development, and it is a product of the managing and the coaching, but it certainly is a product of development. That Brooks Baldwin play, all he did was look at second. He only looked at second. He didn't even think about it. And Miguel Vargas didn't scream at him loud enough, if he did scream at him, to tell him to go home. But yeah, continue. Go ahead. What's your other point?
A collective failure, but I'm a Cubs fan. But one thing I noticed last night, and it had to do with when the Sox scored their run, was that diving catch attempt by Ian Happ. And let me know your take on this. Didn't it seem to you, or it seemed to me, like Pete Crow Armstrong kind of pulled up? Like, I think he might have been able to catch that. Now, they would have scored anyway, you know, probably on a diving catch. But did that look to you like he kind of, with all the talk of him the last couple weeks, do you think he kind of held back?
It's an interesting thought. I thought he was playing a lot towards right center on that, so he had a long way to go. And then he realizes that Hap is there. But I am reminded of when Hap was on with Bernsie and Lawrence Holmes last week and said, Pete has to learn that of what it's like to play next to other capable people. Ian's a Gold Glover. I think he mentioned Pete has to learn about playing with Gold Glovers around him, like Nico and Dansby and Ian. I want him to take every ball from Seiya Suzuki. Take every ball. And maybe that's why he's a little bit more towards right center. But, yeah, you know, Ian has the right. And I'm okay. And look, Ian was there, should have made that play. You ask him, I'm sure he would say that he should have made that play. It's a learning situation out there, and they'll figure it out. And I don't believe that PCA pulled up. I think that was Ian's ball, and he had the realistic chance to get there. Stan is in Bellwood on the score on Hit and Run. Hey, Stan.
Hey, good morning. You speak.
Hey, buddy.
Everything good?
Yep, everything's good. Thank you so much. And my son is complaining about the inconsistent pay as the associate producer. Texters are saying that Spiegs, are you running his $20 through your LLC for tax purposes? That's a good question. It's another one.
Man,
who's cheaper, Jerry Reinsdorf as an owner or Spiegs for only paying Ruben $20 for 3 hours of work? The answer is
that's
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Ryan. Yeah. Absolutely. Get out of that hole with Reinsdorf. That's not where you want to be, man. Hey, listen, I'm triggered by two things, Spiegs, that you've been discussing today. You know what really bothers me, Spiegs, right now, and I haven't really heard, you know, much talk about it from White Sox fans, though you were talking about Yoan Moncada earlier, you know, this black hole of a third base thing with the White Sox. But, you know, I've been watching Miguel Vargas.
Yeah.
You know, since this trade, this deadline trade, and
unimpressed.
I'm not feeling him. See, I mean, you know, I cannot believe, and it really ticks me off to think that this is the key return, you know, from that Kopech Fetty Fam multi-team transaction. He doesn't inspire any emotion at all. I felt a lot better about Brian Ramos earlier this year. I really liked him. He's the guy that I thought was their third baseman of the future. And, of course, Grifol hates young players, so he didn't really give him much of a shot. And I guess Ramos got hurt a little bit, too, that kind of set him back. But I at least felt that Ramos was the guy. Vargas didn't really look to do anything well. And in addition, I thought he was a second baseman. I know that's where he was playing with the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And I was under the impression that the reason that they traded him was because they were loaded at second base. The Dodgers were entertained in thoughts about, I know they've acquired like about 57 infielders, you know, over the last you know, 3 or 4 months. And I just felt that, I thought that the reason that Vargas was traded was more because he was the odd man out and that they really were high on him, but they had no place for him. But now that I'm watching him here, they got rid of him because he can't play.
Well, Vargas, Stan, played 316 games in the minors at third base, just 56 at second base, 32 at first base, and I believe 30 games in the outfield. So he's been a third baseman in the minors. He doesn't really have a position necessarily, but third base is the one. I mean, I guess that's the one where he's got the most of it. In the majors, he's been playing a lot of second base because that's where they've needed somebody. Because Muncy's a real good third baseman. Muncy can play some second base, and they've had other stuff there. But Vargas was getting ready for another positional change with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a lot of players who are good minor league hitters, and you're not sure if they're major league hitters. Cubs traded for one of them, and Michael Busch has worked out very nicely.
Vargas was actually one of the players the Dodgers tried to send instead of Bush in that deal.
Interesting. So, yeah, because I remember hearing about, after the Bush trade, I remember talking to somebody who said, the Dodgers have like eight guys like that. So I don't know if he's going to be any good. Sometimes you don't know if somebody can really do it against major league pitching. It could be that Miguel Vargas cannot. It absolutely could be the case. I don't know, but I think it was still worth a shot. But it's the highlight of what they got. That's the thing about Getz, and we'll hear from him in a minute. The thing about Getz that's frustrating is that it's not just, you know, the way he talks about stuff or the fact that he's that it feels overpromoted. It is widely believed that he got absolutely fleeced at the deadline. I mean, let's take my own arguments about keeping Garrett Crochet out of it, okay? You talk to people around the game, most people think that they should have traded Garrett Crochet. I advocated against it because I was envisioning a big haul at the deadline, and you know, I was trying to feel the positivity of what could possibly happen. But taking my opinion away, I was talking to somebody the other day who said, "Why didn't they trade Crochet in May when he was killing it? Like that's when you pounce and you get as much as you can." I don't know, but he's supposed to wait and play teams against each other. I get it. But the guy I talked to said that he talked to other people in May. Everybody's like, yeah, the White Sox should trade Garrett Crochet now. Should go ahead and do it now. You know? Which is an interesting way of thinking about it. I hope that we get more aggressive early trades in MLB in years moving forward. I really hope that is indeed the case.
Yeah, we need less. It can't just be AJ Preller and Jerry Caputo doing it all the time. We need some guys out there, you know?
Yeah.
Let's make some action happen.
Absolutely. Other texters on Ruben. Tell Ruben I'm putting my money on him for Parkins versus Spiegel versus Spiegel this fall. He's due. That's from the chef in Springfield.
Let's go! I have supporters again.
Yes, you do. You got people who have your back. You gonna try this year on the football picks?
Wow. Hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, what are you saying? That you
pay me my Pokemon cards this time.
That's right. It's all about bribery.
You're in
kid.
A lot of debt.
I am in a lot of debt to
a
you.
A lot.
Yeah, I don't like it. All right, it's enough out of you. Thank you very much. Back to work.
Okay.
All right. 670. The score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. Matt Spiegel here with you. And we will come back and hear from Chris Getz about the White Sox managerial position. And then you're going to hear, I think, the best Craig Counsell of the year so far with Parkins and Spiegel. All of that before Team of the Moment later on this hour on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Speaking of, Jackson Holliday once again lights up a baseball. What a tear he's been on since coming back to the big leagues.
Things are starting to slow down for the young kid. He's 20 years old. I watched him when he was 5 years old in St. Louis when Matt Holliday would throw BP to his two sons. Well, there's going to be a lot of that in the big leagues if he stays healthy.
Jackson Brown, meet Jackson Holliday, who now has four homers in a six-game span. According to Sarah Langs on Twitter, he's the youngest player with four homers in a six-game span since Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did it in 2019. Kid is absolutely on fire. Everywhere you look, there are Jacksons, including for the Brewers, Jackson Churio.
One runner takes off, and a swing and a fly ball out to left center sends Kelnick back, still back, and it is gone! Off the top of the fence and out for Jackson Churio. A baker's dozen now for the 20-year-old.
How about this kid? Look at this swing from Jackson Churio, the kid. Just a minimal stride, minimal head movement, and rides one out of here.
Churio to right. Back, way back and gone again. This time he goes opposite field for another two-run homer.
With a two-homer game, and he just continues to demolish major league pitching. Unbelievable, this kid. Wow. to the opposite field, hits a shot out of here. How do you get this kid out? You cannot.
So Jackson Churio. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing, and I like it. I approve. At 20 years and 150 days old, he's the youngest player in Brewers history to go deep twice in a game. He broke the record of somebody named Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron is the name who he has replaced.
I think I've heard that before.
Big pile of Jacksons everywhere. I saw this, by the way. There'll be another Jackson that you'll hear from a little bit later on the show. I saw this, that this year, for the first time ever, there are more baseball players in Major League Baseball with the first name Jackson than with the last name Jackson. This is the first time ever that first name Jacksons have exceeded last name Jacksons. You're welcome. You didn't know that's why you tuned in, but it is. Craig.
Yeah, it's good to have fun with names.
It really is, Pat. Craig Counsell is on Parkins and Spiegel every couple of weeks, and he was really good on Friday, talking about lots of details with the team, sure, but then we decided to go big picture and zoom out a little bit. Danny went philosophical, and I thought Craig Counsell was good. And guess what, folks? He was funny.
I remember when you got hired, we talked to you about pressure, and you were like, yeah, pressure's a part of this. It's just something that we all deal with. I'm curious, just your experience as a leader. What advice do you have to players, people, anyone dealing with hype, expectation, pressure? How do you coach that in people?
I mean, the best way to do it, there's two things, is to me, is like, just one, get yourself in the moment, because there is none in the moment, and it's actually pretty fun in the moment. It's kind of the expectation of it or the looking forward to it that is the stressful part. But in the moment, that stuff's all fun. That's performance for us. Or that's how I always say it. It's your performance. And then two is, like, you know, I think just being yourself takes a lot of pressure off you. Staying true to yourself, staying true to, like, what got you there. Those things are, to me, always relaxing and calming and good words for players.
Is that hard to do? Is that hard to get across?
Well, is it hard to do? Of course. Yeah. I mean, we all, you know, we're all trying to coach ourselves too, and as well as coach, you know, in our roles, coach others. But, you know, it's the good things to do are the hard things to do.
How do you?
I knew he'd go deep with us.
Oh yeah,
I like that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, God, I'm trying to stay in the moment all the time, and it's hard because you're right. I love that. The fun is in the moment. So, what do you do to coach yourself with that? Do you meditate or do anything like that in terms of trying to stay in the moment?
No, I mean look, breathing is meditation. So I think for everybody, but staying in the moment is just like task at hand. And I think when you think about that, you kind of get into do your job mode. Like, this is my job and I got to do it well for those around me. And I think when you get in that mode, that's not the pressure mode. That's the fun mode. That's the do your job mode is the fun mode, I think. And that's the job. That's the mode that these guys all love to be in. And you just try to get yourself there. And it's a little zone, whatever. You know, you hear about runners talk about when you get in the zone. But, like, when we're all in that do-your-job mode, I think you can kind of get in the zone. And that's when the pressure moments become the fun moments.
Is this the hardest sport to coach that?
Well, it's a hard sport because results, like, fly at you so much. You know, when there's 162 games, they come at you every single day. And that's the good and bad part of it. You know, you get to turn the page really fast, but it also never stops. So I think it's both. You know what I mean? It's the blessing and curse of baseball.
Yeah, I imagine you've got friends in basketball or football or whatever, like, are you ever envious of the time off between games?
No, not envious. I mean, it's hard to fathom sometimes that, like, a football season is only plays 16 games. It's almost hard to, like, have a conversation with a football coach regarding that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. Football is my favorite sport because every game matters. But you would say it matters, like, probably an unfair amount.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes you you have to really, like, even out the highs and lows of the ride when there's so many results. And in football, I understand how with only 16 games, man, it's it's everything every day. Or it's everything every game day.
Yeah, and then the other 6 days, Danny just gets to talk about it.
Hell yeah, it's the best.
That's what he likes, Greg.
Oh, it's so good.
It's just, I mean,
Monday morning quarterback God, the hell out of it. Oh, it's so good.
The ratio.
I can see you getting fired up right now.
I am. Oh God, bear season's
it
right around the
like
corner.
You're more fired up for the non-game days. Yeah, I'll be honest.
Oh, Craig, there's nothing better than my job on a Bears Monday. It's so good.
Yeah, the ratio of talking to playing is way out of whack for this dude right here. Hey, question about real quick about you as a manager. When you started after a life as a player and what, 4 years in the front office, was there anything missing because you didn't have managerial experience? Like, was there anything that you didn't have at your disposal that was noticeable when you started?
I think you don't have like the in-game. I mean, there's a couple of things, the in-game decisions that come at you pretty fast sometimes. Not every night, of course, but occasionally come at you really fast. You just don't have that, you know, experience kind of in your back pocket of knowing, kind of seeing it coming after doing it for a while. That's certainly one. And then, I mean, I think the other one is just you're managing people. And we can say, you know, whether when you're a player or when you're directly responsible for managing people, it's different. And that's a tough responsibility. It's a real responsibility. And things get to your plate that are real when you're managing people.
Yeah. So when you're managing people, I thought that answer is really good. Because you're managing people and you're communicating with people. And that's the stuff that's really hard to scout if you're choosing somebody who's never done it before. You're not just plugging it in. With all the results that are flying at you, you got to be really good at communicating to people, at managing people, at reading people. And it's, boy, that's... We all know those situations, whether it's a property manager in your building, whether it is your boss. You got to be a leader and a communicator and be available to be talked to and know what the hell you're doing. You better get somebody who seems to have those good qualities, and it's really difficult to find somebody who hasn't done it and know what you're actually hiring. With that in mind, let's listen to Chris Getz talking about the manager's job with the White Sox, with Mully and Haw, and what he's going to be looking for. Chris Getz.
Why did you take the step of eliminating the kind of guys who aren't necessarily in a major league uniform right now from being possible candidates for the job?
Well, you know, it's still an evolving list, but there certainly is some truth to the pool of candidates we're going to be targeting. And there's certainly truth to people that are, we're going to be targeting people that are in uniform and in organizations other than the White Sox. And I realize that there are a lot of bright people that aren't currently with other organizations or in uniform or that are, you know, managers that perhaps just out of the game for a year or two. And then you've got, you know, the popular names you listed. But, you know, this is a criteria that we've put together, and we're going to start there. I've got a tremendous amount of respect with the people that you just named. And, I mean, I look at Ozzie, and Ozzie, I've known Ozzie a long time, and I consider him a close friend. He brought me up to the big leagues. He fought for me, and I'll never forget that, and I really enjoyed playing for him. I really care and love the guy, and I know he has been extremely supportive along the way. But I still need to focus on what's best for the White Sox. As it stands today, we're going to target, a list of people that fit the criteria that I believe are best for the Chicago White Sox moving forward.
Chris, is this your hire? Is it you and no one else making this decision?
Yes. Yeah, it's my decision. I can't wait to get to down to work today. We're beginning to get organized with these candidates and get that process started. I think it's just a big day, a big portion of this season now is going to be in preparation for this exhaustive search and getting this team to the finish line to find you know, moments here for our young players to continue to get better and prepare for the following season. So we have a lot on our plate, but I'm really excited to get rolling.
How much are the White Sox willing to spend to get the right manager, or is this organization not at the point yet where they can afford to hire that kind of manager for this kind of team?
When it comes to the White Sox, it's going to start with what's the best fit for us. We start there, and those conversations evolve into the more of the mechanics of a contract or anything like that. I'm going in with a blank slate, looking for the best candidates, and you try to work out a deal to bring that person into the Chicago White Sox. But to go into detail in terms of contract length or the amount of money that you're going to spend on an annual basis for that, gosh, I'm just focused on the pool of candidates and you know, getting down to business and finding the right fit for us.
I'm curious, Chris, how do you sell this job to someone? Do you have to? Just because, you know, we're sitting here talking about you rebuilding a team from the studs up. You could argue that you haven't gotten there yet, that the teardown's still on. You got to figure out whether you're going to trade Garrett Crochet. What you were shopping him. What do you get in return? Is Luis Robert part of the long-term future? Are you still tearing down here, and how do you sell that to someone?
You know, the vision that we have here, and this goes back to when I was named in the fall last year and talking to employees that were outside of the organization and recruiting them to come in, and, you know, they needed to understand what the process was going to be and what was, you know, what it eventually was going to look like. They had to have a belief in myself and others that remained in the organization. And we were able to bring in some, you know, Brian Bannister, who's one of the sharper pitching minds in this game. And I brought in Josh Barfield, who was a successful farm director, you know, with the Diamondbacks and others that have come in and help us lead the way. Now, this wasn't about, you know, 2024. It wasn't. It was about building something sustainable for the future. And the process that goes into doing that, you know, it's deep-rooted. It really does start from the bottom, and it's going to take time to build up. But there are a lot of competitive, bright people that understand that and have watched and felt, you know, this type of process be applied and worked in other organizations. So when people look back at their careers, they feel proud to be part of something like this. This is not something that was, you know, just handed to me and all of a sudden we were going to make a World Series run. That's not the case, and that rarely is in our game. If anything, you know, you continue to bring in the best talent that you can to help you in the front office, and obviously when it comes to coaches and scouts and analytic minds to help bring this all together. And as we build this, and eventually we'll get it to where it needs to be, there'll be nothing more rewarding. So, you know, that's the basis of this. It's going to take time. I'm looking for people that are willing to and eager to take on this challenge. And I am convinced that there are people that are going to want to be a part of this.
Well, good luck with that, Chris. He said he's convinced that there are people who are willing and want to be a part of that. And that's frankly something that a lot of folks around baseball doubt. There are only 30 jobs, though. There are only 30 big league manager jobs. And I wonder if he will end up going back to someone who knows the Sox, loves the Sox, has been here before, wants to right the ship. I don't know. I mean, maybe not. I'm sure there'll be people like, you know, Pedro Grifol dying for a chance. Pedro was a bench coach for a long time in Kansas City and got passed over by Kansas City, got passed over by others. I mean, there are people that happens to, and then there are people and they eventually become managers and you're like, oh, look at that. Yes, they were ready to do this job all along. And there are people that get passed over and they get jobs eventually. And you're like, oh, that's why they didn't get a job. Oh, OK, I get it. I can't stop thinking about the kind of personality you need to have as a leader, a communicator, and how difficult it is to really scout. Pedro Grifol seemed to be a guy who was made for it, you know, really, really sold Rick Hahn, really sold Chris Getz. Chris Getz very much believed in Pedro. It wasn't just Rick, but the two of them, you know, got sold by Pedro. Is Pedro a good guy? Yeah, I think he is. Is Pedro a little bit hard to take seriously sometimes? Apparently, that's what I've heard. Is there a part of Pedro had been described by somebody who used to play with him and play for him as, quote, a fraud, unquote. And that's a heavy thing. Because realness and genuineness is like, it's gotta be there. Whatever you are, if you're a jackass, be a jackass. You know, if you don't care about certain things, then don't care about certain things. But be real. Baseball's too long, too many games, too many days for you not to be real. People will smell that and tune you the hell out. It's a very difficult personality mix to find and scout. And to rule out people who are not in uniform is to rule out David Ross, is to rule out Terry Francona, is to rule out Joe Girardi. And that's odd to me. And we'll see if that ends up holding true. He said there's a little bit more wiggle there. But this is Chris Getz's opportunity, and I hope he gets it right. It's just not as important when the team is as far away as the White Sox are. If you want to hop in, you can do it on text or on phone at 312-644-6767 for our final segment coming up. We are not previewing a baseball game. There are no baseball games later today involving the Cubs or the White Sox. None at all. Cubs aren't playing. The White Sox aren't playing. It's a Sunday in the middle of August. What the hell is going on around here? Team of the Moment is what's going on next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
High fly ball, deep right center field. It is back, and it is gone! Home run number two of the night for Jackson Merrill. Ties The Score at 6 aside. So here's a high fly ball headed out towards right center field. Deeply hit back at the wall. It is gone! Jackson Merrill ties The Score. He's at it again in the ninth inning. Merrill to right field. Brujan going back. It's Merrill madness. Two-run shot ties The Score 7-7. The kid's done it again. Unbelievable. It's a good baseball game.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Live bonus harmonies for you on Hit and Run. Team of the moment is the San Diego Padres. I know they've done it before. They've been a team of the moment earlier on in the year, but my goodness. They are on a ridiculous heater. The Padres have won 16 of 19 games since the All-Star break. They've won 7 games in a row. At 16 of 19, they're on the verge of just, you know, absolutely running away with the wild card at this point in the National League. They are the Padres, the first wild card team at 66-52. And in terms of the division, I mean, the Dodgers are up by 2.5 games on San Diego, 3.5 on Arizona. That National League West is ridiculous. But 16 of 19 for the Padres, 7 in a row. And Jackson Merrill has 5 game-tying or go-ahead home runs in the 8th inning or later this season.
Another Jackson?
Jackson Merrill. We're loaded with Jacksons. There he is, the third Jackson of note, who needs to be mentioned. Jackson Merrill has 5 game-tying or go-ahead home runs in the 8th inning or later this season. That ties him with Mel Ott in 1929. That's a great player. Look at Mel Ott's stats sometime. For the second most in a season by a player 21 or younger, Frank Robinson is number one. That's a great player. Look at his numbers sometime. To be this young and this good is very, very, very special. Very rare. More on Jackson Merrill. I mean, so yesterday he had what? The home run, another game-tying home run. It's just, He had a ninth-inning game-tying home run against the Dodgers, a ninth-inning one against the Pirates, a ninth-inning one against Miami, an eighth-inning one against Miami. He just keeps on going and going and going. And then there is the Padres bullpen. This is the thing. Right now, that Padres bullpen is outrageous. And it was the worst in MLB at a certain point. But the Padres' bullpen ERA over its last 13 games at this point is 2.05. That is the lowest in MLB. Kevin Acey of the San Diego Tribune all over it. Now, here they have the southpaw, Tanner Scott. They've got Brian Hoeing. They have Jason Adam, who they added from the deadline. Another different kind of look. That adds
changeup.
Oh, dude, Adam with a crazy changeup. Robert Suarez's four-seam fastball is filthy, as is Jeremiah Estrada, the former Cub.
Well, I've heard that name before.
And both of those guys with nasty breaking balls to go along with it. Suarez is not allowed to run while he was on the mound since July 5th. Estrada has a pitch they call the chitter. It's a chitter. I don't know what that is. The slinker is what Skeens have. Got hit around a little bit last night from the Pirates. But man, they are so deep. So there's the three new ones, and then there's the four, along with Adrian Morjon and Yuki Matsui. They've got seven great arms in that bullpen.
So the chitter is a split changeup?
Okay, so yeah, it's a split changeup. So it's a splitter that has a little changeup tendencies. So there you go. That's the one that they taught him that the Cubs did not for Jeremiah Estrada. They've got seven great arms in that bullpen. And they're, you know, Joe Musgrove is coming back now. We know what Dylan Cease has done. They're doing all of this, by the way, with Yu Darvish nowhere. With Yu Darvish, for personal reasons, being away from the team. And there was a report that Yu Darvish may not actually be coming back. So, I mean, it's kind of amazing that they're getting it done. But they've made so many deals for starting pitchers. I don't know if A.J. Preller is being a GM for his job, if he's GMing for his job. That's been one of the rumors out there. But my goodness, the Padres are on an incredible heater. And I put some money on them at plus 3,000 to win the World Series just at the deadline. As soon as they made those trades, I was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and do that because that bullpen mix is filthy. And what an effect on a team to know your bullpen is that dominant. Luis Arraez was quoted about it and said, the offense has been great, the resiliency is great, but, quote, we have the best relievers in the game. Knowing that makes them more relaxed, and we know that confidence can breed success. Pretty awesome stuff going on in baseball right now. Cleveland and Minnesota in a big-time series of consequence in the American League Central. And there's a lot of good stuff going on. Texter asking, hey, Speaks, I wasn't able to catch all of Mully and Hall with Chris Getz. Did either of them ask where Tony La Russa fits in and how much influence he has? Yes, they did. That text from General Confusion. Salute. They did. It was a really good interview. I thought those guys were terrific with Chris Getz. And they did ask him what role Tony has. Is he basically Kenny Williams at this point? And Getz said, no, he's not. So he said that he just asks him for advice sometimes, and he doesn't listen to him. I have the final answer, said Chris Getz. Sometimes I listen to Tony, and it has an effect days or weeks later. Sometimes I don't, etc. That Tony's just there as an advisor. So the day off today for the Cubs and the White Sox, just an outrageous, outrageous occurrence. I am told that it is the first time the Cubs have had a scheduled day off since 1932 on a Sunday. They've had other Sundays off because of makeup situations or weird things, but not since 1932 have the Cubs had a scheduled Sunday day off. And looking back at that roster, I can say with pretty calm assurance that Gabby Hartnett probably hosted everyone for a barbecue. Because Gabby was that kind of guy. Gabby Hartnett later at a bowling alley on the Northwest Side, owned a bowling alley for decades on the Northwest Side. He enjoyed a festive gathering. You know what I mean? I'm borrowing this from my pal Len Casper, who says that Nellie Fox, he's pretty sure, hosted a barbecue in 1954, the last time the White Sox had a scheduled Sunday day off.
Tin for World War II as well, too, because obviously that happened before World War II.
Yeah, well before World War II.
Right. So it's crazy to think the Cubs have had less off days since World War II.
Yeah. So, you know, so really the question then becomes, who was most likely to be hosting their ball clubs for a barbecue today? You know, it would have been a John Lester job when he was here. He hosted gatherings all the time. Which Cub is most likely to be hosting a barbecue today? This is the kind of topics that you get in at 11:53 as you're getting ready for Rami Makhlouf's show here. But believe me, I'll bring it back for Parkins and Spiegel today. All right, tomorrow, I should say. So
my money's on Swanson. That'd be my pick.
Dansby Swanson, yeah, in the basement. Celebrate the celebrate the women's Olympic gold at the same time. We're having an Olympic closing ceremonies party as well as a Sunday off day party. That's a good guess that it would be Swanson. For the White Sox, I think it's Nicky Lopez.
I think it has to be Nicky. I don't think I can name another player.
You can't name another player on the White Sox?
I can. Luis Robert's there.
You should be able to.
Is Lory Garcia still here?
He's not. He's not still here. So, yeah, there you go. What a fun show this has been here on Hit and Run. Thank you to our guest on the show, Steve Stone. We didn't need any other guests. It's 3 hours. We don't need one. And, you know, we don't just have one producer. We have two. Yeah, that's right. We have an associate producer. Whether he gets paid or not, he works here.
I'm underage for a job.
Stop alerting the powers that be.
All right, I'll delete it from the FCC.
Please delete it. Thank you so much to all the listeners, all the callers, all the texters. Thank you so much to everyone for hanging out. Thank you to Sean Sears. Thank you to Ruben Spiegel. Thank you to Mitch Rosen for the fine work that he does, the executive producer of this radio station. Parkins and Spiegel's going to be hopping all week. Highly recommend listening all week long. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Rami Makhlouf is next on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
It's been like a dream, honestly. You know, a lot of it doesn't feel real, but it's been fun. You know, I'm really proud of just the way these guys have played, the way they've gone about their work, and just the way they've competed, you know, in those games. It's been different in the dugout, and I just want to build off of that. I told them, just keep going, just keep fighting, keep playing like that, and I think good things will happen.
That is Grady Sizemore. He is the interim manager for the Chicago White Sox. Folks know what trade Grady Sizemore was in, right? It's one of the all-time trades. I think of it very often because in late June of 2002, the Montreal Expos decided they wanted Bartolo Colon from Cleveland. And, oh, wait a minute. Do I have that wrong? Oh, yeah, no, here it is. So, yeah, the Expos decided they wanted Bartolo Colon for that stretch run. And, Sean, see what Bartolo Colon did for the Expos in 2002, will ya? And how long he was there. Because the general manager in Cleveland asked for a package of prospects. And the prospects he asked for, he got. One of them was Cliff Lee, who went on to an unbelievable career as a Cy Young winner and more with Cleveland and eventually with the Phillies. One of them was Brandon Phillips, who went on to a tremendous career as a second baseman and hitter for Cleveland and later for Cincinnati. And one of them was Grady Sizemore, who looked like a five-tool center field MVP caliber ball player as a young member of the Cleveland Indians. I mean, an outrageous prospect haul for Bartolo Colon to the Expos in 2002.
So Bartolo Colon in 2002 was 10-4 with a 3.31 ERA. Pitched about over 117 innings.
Okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right.
It's pretty good. And then that was it for... Was he a rental?
Yeah, he was gone after that. He went to the White Sox, and then he was with the A's for a couple of years before going back to Boston.
So it was right before Bartolo came to the White Sox, and I had that whole thing where he disappeared to Mexico for a while. Yeah. There was a lot that went on.
That was weird.
Remember that? Yeah, there's a lot that went on. But anyway, how's that for a rental? Brandon Phillips, Cliff Lee, and Grady Sizemore. Unbelievable. But anyway, Grady Sizemore, the manager of the White Sox for now. You'll hear from Chris Getz and from Craig Counsell about managing and more coming up a little bit later this hour. But let's take some of these phone calls as we wrap up talking about these games, the White Sox and the Cubs. This is Guy in Hazelcrest on 670 The Score. What's up, Guy?
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Wonderful. There's a couple things I wanted to point out. One is more of a pile on the Sox, but it's just so hard watching them play. When the Cubs scored their first run, that was just a ridiculous play. There's no way that run should have scored. And it's just hard to watch a team when, like, not only are they bad, but they're just not doing any of the fundamental things right. And that's hard to watch, but that's not really what I wanted to.
Hey Guy, let me comment on that though. Cause you couldn't be more right. And it's been that way for a long time. And even when they were good a couple of years ago and got their ass kicked by the Astros in the postseason, we knew that they weren't doing fundamental things well. And that's a product of development, and it is a product of the managing and the coaching, but it certainly is a product of development. That Brooks Baldwin play, he all he did was look at second. He only looked at second. He didn't even think about it. And Miguel Vargas didn't scream at him loud enough, if he did scream at him, to tell him to go home. But yeah, continue. Go ahead. What's your other point?
A collective failure. But I'm a Cubs fan. But one thing I noticed last night, and it had to do with when the Sox scored their run, was that diving catch attempt by Ian Happ. And let me know your take on this. Didn't it seem to you, or it seemed to me, like P. Crow Armstrong kind of pulled up? Like, I think he might have been able to catch that. Now, they would have scored anyway, you know, probably on a diving catch. But did that look to you like he kind of, with all the talk of him the last couple of weeks, do you think he kind of held back?
It's an interesting thought. I thought he was playing a lot towards right center on that, so he had a long way to go. And then he realizes that Happ is there. But I am reminded of when Happ was on with Bernsie and Lawrence Holmes last week and said, Pete has to learn that of what it's like to play next to other capable people. Ian's a Gold Glover. I think he mentioned Pete has to learn about playing with Gold Glovers around him, like Nico and Dansby and Ian. I want him to take every ball from Seiya Suzuki. Take every ball. And maybe that's why he's a little bit more towards right center. But Ian has the right. And I'm okay. And look, Ian was there, should have made that play. You ask him, I'm sure he would say that he should have made that play. It's a learning situation out there, and they'll figure it out. And I don't believe that PCA pulled up. I think that was Ian's ball, and he had the realistic chance to get there. Stan is in Bellwood on the score on Hit and Run. Hey, Stan.
Hey, good morning. You speak.
Hey, buddy.
Everything good?
Yep, everything's good. Thank you so much. My son is complaining about the inconsistent pay as the associate producer. Texters are saying that, Spiegs, are you running his $20 through your LLC for tax purposes? That's a good question. It's another one. Who's cheaper, Jerry Reinsdorf as an owner or Spiegs for only paying Ruben $20 for 3 hours of work? The answer is Jerry Reinsdorf.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Get out of that hole with Reinsdorf. That's not where you want to be, man. Hey, listen, I'm triggered by two things, Spiegs, you've been discussing today. What really bothers me, Spiegs, right now, and I haven't really heard, you know, much talk about it from White Sox fans, though you were talking about Yoan Moncada earlier, you know, this black hole of a third base thing with the White Sox. But, you know, I've been watching Miguel Vargas.
Yeah.
Since this trade, this deadline trade, and
unimpressed.
I'm not feeling him. See, I cannot believe, and it really ticks me off to think that this is the key return, you know, from that Kopech Fetty Fam multi-team transaction. he doesn't inspire any emotion at all. I mean, I feel a lot better about Brian Ramos earlier this year. I really liked him. He's a guy that I thought was their third baseman of the future. And, of course, Grifol hates young players, so he didn't really give him much of a shot. And I guess Ramos got hurt a little bit, too, that kind of set him back. But I at least felt that Ramos was the guy. Vargas didn't really look to do anything well. And in addition, I thought he was a second baseman. I know that's where he was playing with the Dodgers, mm-hmm. and I was under the impression that the reason that they traded him was because they were loaded at second base. The Dodgers were entertained in thoughts about, I know they've acquired like about 57 infielders, you know, over the last three or four months. And I just felt that, I thought that the reason that Vargas was traded was more because he was the odd man out and that they really were high on him, but they had no place for him. But now that I'm watching him here, they got rid of him because he can't play.
Well, Vargas, Stan, played 316 games in the minors at third base, just 56 at second base, 32 at first base, and I believe 30 games in the outfield. So he's been a third baseman in the minors. He doesn't really have a position necessarily, but third base is the one. I mean, I guess that's the one where he's got the most of it. In the majors, he's been playing a lot of second base because that's where they've needed somebody. Because Muncy's a real good third baseman. Muncy can play some second base, and they've had other stuff there. But Vargas was getting ready for another positional change with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a lot of players who are good minor league hitters, and you're not sure if they're major league hitters. Cubs traded for one of them, and Michael Busch has worked out very nicely.
Vargas was actually one of the players the Dodgers tried to send instead of Busch in that deal.
Interesting. So, yeah, because I remember hearing about, after the Busch trade, I remember talking to somebody who said, the Dodgers have like eight guys like that. So I don't know if he's going to be any good. Sometimes you don't know if somebody can really do it against major league pitching. It could be that Miguel Vargas cannot. It absolutely could be the case. I don't know. But I think it was still worth a shot. But it's the highlight of what they got. That's the thing about Getz, and we'll hear from him in a minute. The thing about Getz that's frustrating is that it's not just, you know, the way he talks about stuff or the fact that he's that it feels overpromoted. It is widely believed that he got absolutely fleeced at the deadline. I mean, let's take my own arguments about keeping Garrett Crochet out of it, okay? You talk to people around the game, most people think that they should have traded Garrett Crochet. I advocated against it because I was envisioning a big haul at the deadline, and, you know, I was trying to feel the positivity of what could possibly happen. But taking my opinion away, I was talking to somebody the other day who said, why didn't they trade Crochet in May when he was killing it? Like that's when you pounce and you get as much as you can. I don't know, but he's supposed to wait and play teams against each other. I get it. But the guy I talked to said that he talked to other people in May. Everybody's like, yeah, the White Sox should trade Garrett Crochet now. Should go ahead and do it now. You know? Which is an interesting way of thinking about it. I hope that we get more aggressive early trades in MLB in years moving forward. I really hope that is indeed the case.
Yeah, we need less. It can't just be AJ Preller and Jerry Jeputo doing it all the time. We need some guys out there, you know?
Yeah.
Let's make some action happen.
Absolutely. Other texters on Ruben. Tell Ruben I'm putting my money on him for Parkins versus Spiegel versus Spiegel this fall. He's due. That's from the chef in Springfield.
Let's go! I have supporters again.
Yes, you do. You got people who have your back. You gonna try this year on the football picks?
Wow. Hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, what are you saying? That you
pay me my Pokemon cards this time?
That's right. It's all about bribery.
You're in a lot of debt.
I am in a lot of debt to you.
A lot.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. All right, it's enough out of you. Thank you very much. Back to work.
Okay.
All right. 670 The Score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. Matt Spiegel here with you. And we will come back and hear from Chris Getz about the White Sox managerial position. And then you're going to hear, I think, the best Craig Counsell of the year so far with Parkins and Spiegel. All of that before Team of the Moment later on this hour on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Speaking of, Jackson Holliday once again lights up a baseball. What a tear he's been on since coming back to the big leagues.
Things are starting to slow down for the young kid. He's 20 years old. I watched him when he was 5 years old in St. Louis when Matt Holliday would throw BP to his two sons. Well, there's going to be a lot of that in the big leagues if he stays healthy.
Jackson Brown, meet Jackson Holliday, who now has four homers in a six-game span. According to Sarah Langs on Twitter, is the youngest player with four homers in a six-game span since Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did it in 2019. Kid is absolutely on fire. Everywhere you look, there are Jacksons, including for the Brewers, Jackson Churio.
One runner takes off, and a swing and a fly ball out to left center sends Kelnick back, still back, and it is gone! Off the top of the fence and out for Jackson Churio. A baker's dozen now for the 20-year-old.
How about this kid? Look at this swing from Jackson Churio, the kid. Just a minimal stride, minimal head movement, and rides one out of here.
Churio to right. Back, way back and gone again. This time he goes opposite field for another two-run homer.
With a two-homer game, and he just continues to demolish Major League pitching. Unbelievable, this kid. Wow. So the opposite field hits a shot out of here. How do you get this kid out? You cannot.
So Jackson Churio. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing, and I like it. I approve. At 20 years and 150 days old, he's the youngest player in Brewers history to go deep twice in a game. He broke the record of somebody named Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron is the name who he has replaced.
I think I've heard that before.
Big pile of Jacksons everywhere. I saw this, by the way. There'll be another Jackson that you'll hear from a little bit later on the show. I saw this, that this year, for the first time ever, there are more baseball players in Major League Baseball with the first name Jackson than with the last name Jackson. This is the first time ever that first name Jacksons have exceeded last name Jacksons. You're welcome. You didn't know that's why you tuned in, but it is. Craig.
Yeah, it's good to have fun with names.
It really is, Pat. Craig Counsell is on Parkins and Spiegel every couple of weeks, and he was really good on Friday talking about lots of details with the team, sure, but then we decided to go big picture and zoom out a little bit. Danny went philosophical, and I thought Craig Counsell was good. And guess what, folks? He was funny.
I remember when you got hired, we talked to you about pressure, and you were like, yeah, pressure's a part of this. It's just something that we all deal with. I'm curious just your experience as a leader. What advice do you have to players, people, anyone dealing with hype, expectation, pressure? How do you coach that in people?
I mean, the best way to do it, there's two things, is to me, is like, just one, get yourself in the moment, because there is none in the moment, and it's actually pretty fun in the moment. It's kind of the expectation of it or the looking forward to it that is the stressful part. But in the moment, that stuff's all fun. That's performance for us. So that's how I always say it. It's your performance. And then two is like, you know, I think just being yourself takes a lot of pressure off you. Staying true to yourself, staying true to like what got you there. Those things are, to me, always relaxing and calming and good words for players.
Is that hard to do? Is that hard to get across?
Well, is it hard to do? Of course. Yeah. I mean, we all, you know, we're all trying to coach ourselves too, and as well as coach, you know, in our roles, coach others. But, you know, it's the good things to do are the hard things to do.
How do you?
I knew he'd go deep with us.
Oh yeah,
I like that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, God, I'm trying to stay in the moment all the time, and it's hard because you're right. I love that. The fun is in the moment. So, what do you do to coach yourself with that? Do you meditate or do anything like that in terms of trying to stay in the moment?
No, I mean it's. I mean, like, look, breathing is meditation. So I think for everybody, but. Staying in the moment is just like task at hand. And I think when you think about that, you kind of get into do your job mode. Like, this is my job and I got to do it well for those around me. And I think when you get in that mode, that's not the pressure mode. That's the fun mode. That's the do your job mode is the fun mode, I think. And that's the job that's the mode that these guys all love to be in. And you just try to get yourself there. And it's a little zone, whatever. You know, you talk about, hear about runners talk about when you get in the zone. But, like, when we're all in that do-your-job mode, I think you can kind of get in the zone. And that's when the pressure moments become the fun moments.
Is this the hardest sport to coach that?
Well, it's a hard sport because results, like, fly at you so much. You know, when there's 162 games, they come at you every single day. And that's the good and bad part of it. You know, you get to turn the page really fast, but it also never stops. So I think it's both. You know what I mean? It's the blessing and curse of baseball.
Yeah, I imagine you've got friends in basketball or football or whatever, like, are you ever envious of the time off between games?
No, not envious. I mean, it's hard to fathom sometimes that, like, a football season is only plays 16 games. It's almost hard to, like, have a conversation with a football coach regarding that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. Football is my favorite sport because every game matters. But you would say it matters, like, probably an unfair amount.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes you you have to really, like, even out the highs and lows of the ride when there's so many results. And in football, I understand how with only 16 games, man, it's everything every day, or it's everything every game day.
Yeah, and then the other 6 days, Danny just gets to talk about it.
Hell yeah, it's the best.
That's what he likes, Greg.
Oh, it's so good.
It's just, I mean,
Monday morning quarterback, God, the hell out of it. Oh, it's so good.
The ratio.
I can see you getting fired up right now.
I am. Oh God, bear season's right around the corner.
Sounds like you're more fired up for the non-game days. Yeah, I'll be honest.
Oh, Craig, there's nothing better than my job on a Bears Monday. It's so good.
Yeah, the ratio of talking to playing is way out of whack for this dude right here. Hey, question about, real quick, about you as a manager. When you started after a life as a player and, what, 4 years in the front office, was there anything missing because you didn't have managerial experience? Like, was there anything that you didn't have at your disposal that was noticeable when you started?
I think you don't have, like, the in-game. I mean, there's a couple of things. The in-game decisions that come at you pretty fast sometimes. Not every night, of course, but occasionally come at you really fast. You just don't have that, you know, experience kind of in your back pocket of knowing, kind of seeing it coming after doing it for a while. That's certainly one. And then, I mean, I think the other one is just you're managing people. And we can say, you know, whether when you're a player or when you're directly responsible for managing people, it's different. And that's a tough responsibility. It's a real responsibility. And things get to your plate that are real when you're managing people.
Yeah, so when you're managing people, I thought that answer is really good. Because you're managing people and you're communicating with people. And that's the stuff that's really hard to scout if you're choosing somebody who's never done it before. You're not just plugging it in. With all the results that are flying at you, you got to be really good at communicating to people, at managing people, at reading people. And it's, boy, that's... We all know those situations, whether it's a property manager in your building, whether it is your boss. You got to be a leader and a communicator and be available to be talked to and know what the hell you're doing. You better get somebody who seems to have those good qualities, and it's really difficult to find somebody who hasn't done it and know what you're actually hiring. With that in mind, let's listen to Chris Getz talking about the manager's job with the White Sox, with Mully and Haw, and what he's going to be looking for. Chris Getz.
Why did you take the step of eliminating the kind of guys who aren't necessarily in a major league uniform right now from being possible candidates for the job?
Well, you know, it's still an evolving list, and but there certainly is some truth to the pool of candidates we're going to be targeting. And there's certainly truth to people that are – we're going to be targeting people that are in uniform and organizations other than the White Sox. And I realize there are a lot of bright people that aren't currently with other organizations or in uniform or that are, you know, managers that perhaps just out of the game for a year or two. And then you've got, you know, the popular names like you listed. But, you know, this is a criteria that we've put together, and we're going to start there. I've got a tremendous amount of respect with the people that you just named. And I mean, I look at Ozzie, and Ozzie, I've known Ozzie a long time, and I consider him a close friend. He brought me up to the big leagues. He fought for me. And I'll never forget that. And I really enjoyed playing for him. I really care and love the guy. And I know he has been extremely supportive along the way. But I still need to focus on what's best for the White Sox. And you know, as it stands today, we're going to target, a list of people that fit the criteria that I believe are best for the Chicago White Sox moving forward.
Chris, is this your hire? Is it you and no one else making this decision?
Yes. Yeah, it's my decision. I can't wait to get to down to work today. We're beginning to get organized with these candidates and get that process started. I think it's just a big day, a big portion of this season now is going to be in preparation for this exhaustive search and getting this team to the finish line to find moments here for our young players to continue to get better and prepare for the following season. So we have a lot on our plate, but I'm really excited to get rolling.
How much are the White Sox willing to spend to get the right manager, or is this organization not at the point yet where they can afford to hire that kind of manager for this kind of team?
When it comes to the White Sox, it's going to start with what's the best fit for us. We start there, and those conversations evolve into some more of the mechanics of a contract or anything like that. I'm going in with a blank slate, looking for the best candidates, and you try to work out a deal to bring that person into the Chicago White Sox. But to go into detail in terms of contract length or the amount of money that you're going to spend on an annual basis for that, gosh, I'm just focused on the pool of candidates and getting down to business and finding the right fit for us.
I'm curious, Chris, how do you sell this job to someone? Do you have to? Just because, you know, we're sitting here talking about you rebuilding a team from the studs up. You could argue that you haven't gotten there yet, that the teardown's still on. You got to figure out whether you're going to trade Garrett Crochet. You were shopping him. What do you get in return? Is Luis Robert part of the long-term future? Are you still tearing down here, and how do you sell that to someone?
You know, the vision that we have here, and this goes back to when I was named in the fall last year and talking to employees that were outside of the organization and recruiting them to come in. And, they needed to understand what the process was going to be and what was, you know, what it eventually was going to look like. They had to have a belief in myself and others that remained in the organization. And we were able to bring in some, you know, Brian Bannister, who's one of the sharper pitching minds in this game. And I brought in Josh Barfield, who was a successful farm director, with the Diamondbacks and others that have come in and help us lead the way. Now, this wasn't about, 2024. It wasn't. It was about building something sustainable for the future. And the process that goes into doing that, you know, it's deep-rooted. It really does start from the bottom, and it's going to take time to build up. But there are a lot of competitive, bright people that understand that and have watched and felt, this type of process be applied and worked in other organizations. So when people look back at their careers, they feel proud to be part of something like this. This is not something that was, you know, just handed to me and all of a sudden we were going to make a World Series run. That's not the case, and that rarely is in our game. If anything, you know, you continue to bring in the best talent that you can to help you in the front office, and obviously when it comes to coaches and scouts and analytic minds to help bring this all together. And as we build this, and eventually we'll get it to where it needs to be, there will be nothing more rewarding. So, you know, that's the basis of this. It's going to take time. I'm looking for people that are willing to and eager to take on this challenge. And I am convinced that there are people that are going to want to be a part of this.
Well, good luck with that, Chris. He said he's convinced that there are people who are willing and want to be a part of that. And that's frankly something that a lot of folks around baseball doubt. There are only 30 jobs, though. There are only 30 big league manager jobs. And I wonder if he will end up going back to someone who knows the Sox, loves the Sox, has been here before, wants to right the ship. I don't know. I mean, maybe not. I'm sure there'll be people like, you know, Pedro Grifol dying for a chance. Pedro was a bench coach for a long time in Kansas City and got passed over by Kansas City, got passed over by others. I mean, there are people that happens to, and then there are people and they eventually become managers and you're like, oh, look at that. Yes, they were ready to do this job all along. And there are people that get passed over and they get jobs eventually. And you're like, oh, that's why they didn't get a job. Oh, okay. I get it. I can't stop thinking about the kind of personality you need to have as a leader, a communicator, and how difficult it is to really scout. Pedro Grifol seemed to be a guy who was made for it, you know? Really, really sold Rick Hahn, really sold Chris Getz. Chris Getz very much believed in Pedro. It wasn't just Rick. But the two of them, you know, got sold by Pedro. Is Pedro a good guy? Yeah, I think he is. Is Pedro a little bit hard to take seriously sometimes? Apparently, that's what I've heard. Is there a part of Pedro had been described by somebody who used to play with him and play for him as, quote, a fraud, unquote. And that's a heavy thing. Because realness and genuineness is like, it's gotta be there. Whatever you are, if you're a jackass, be a jackass. You know, if you don't care about certain things, then don't care about certain things. But be real. Baseball's too long, too many games, too many days for you not to be real. People will smell that and tune you the hell out. It's a very difficult personality mix to find and scout. And to rule out people who are not in uniform is to rule out David Ross, is to rule out Terry Francona, is to rule out Joe Girardi. And that's odd to me. And we'll see if that ends up holding true. He said there's a little bit more wiggle there. But this is Chris Getz's opportunity, and I hope he gets it right. It's just not as important when the team is as far away as the White Sox are. If you want to hop in, you can do it on text or on phone at 312-644-6767 for our final segment coming up. We are not previewing a baseball game. There are no baseball games later today involving the Cubs or the White Sox. None at all. Cubs aren't playing. The White Sox aren't playing. It's a Sunday in the middle of August. What the hell is going on around here? Team of the Moment is what's going on next on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
High fly ball, deep right center field. It is back, and it is gone! Home run number two of the night for Jackson Merrill. Ties The Score at 6 aside. So here's a high fly ball headed out towards right center field. Deeply hit back at the wall. It is gone! Jackson Merrill ties The Score. He's at it again in the ninth inning. Merrill to right field. Brujan going back. It's Merrill madness. Two-run shot ties The Score 7-7. The kid's done it again. Unbelievable. It's a good baseball game.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Live bonus harmonies for you on Hit and Run. Team of the moment is the San Diego Padres. I know they've done it before. They've been a team of the moment earlier on in the year. But my goodness, they are on a ridiculous heater. The Padres have won 16 of 19 games since the All-Star break. They've won 7 games in a row. At 16 of 19, they're on the verge of just, you know, absolutely running away with the wild card at this point in the National League. They are the Padres, the first wild card team at 66 and 52. And in terms of the division, I mean, the Dodgers are up by 2.5 games on San Diego, 3.5 on Arizona. That National League West is ridiculous. But 16 of 19 for the Padres, 7 in a row. And Jackson Merrill has 5 game-tying or go-ahead home runs in the 8th inning or later this season.
Another Jackson?
Jackson Merrill. We're loaded with Jacksons. There he is, the third Jackson of note, who needs to be mentioned. Jackson Merrill has 5 game-tying or go-ahead home runs in the 8th inning or later this season. That ties him with Mel Ott in 1929. That's a great player. Look at Mel Ott's stats sometime. For the second most in a season by a player 21 or younger, Frank Robinson is number one. That's a great player. Look at his numbers sometime. To be this young and this good is very, very, very special. Very rare. More on Jackson Merrill. I mean, so yesterday he had what? The home run, another game-tying home run. It's just, he had a ninth-inning game-tying home run against the Dodgers, a ninth-inning one against the Pirates, a ninth-inning one against Miami, an eighth-inning one against Miami. He just keeps on going and going and going. And then there is the Padres bullpen. This is the thing. Right now, that Padres bullpen is outrageous. And it was the worst in MLB at a certain point. But the Padres' bullpen ERA over its last 13 games at this point is 2.05. That is the lowest in MLB. Kevin Acey of the San Diego Tribune all over it. Now, here they have the southpaw, Tanner Scott. They've got Brian Hoeing. They have Jason Adam, who they added from the deadline. Another different kind of look. That adds
changeup.
Oh, dude, Adam with a crazy changeup. Robert Suarez's four-seam fastball is filthy, as is Jeremiah Estrada, the former Cub.
Well, I've heard that name before.
And both of those guys with nasty breaking balls to go along with it. Suarez has not allowed a run while he was on the mound since July 5th. Estrada has a pitch they call the chitter. It's a chitter. I don't know what that is. The slinker is what Skeens have. Got hit around a little bit last night from the Pirates. But man, they are so deep. So there's the 3 new ones, and then there's the 4, along with Adrian Morjon and Yuki Matsui. They've got 7 great arms in that bullpen.
So the chitter is a split changeup?
Okay, so yeah, it's a split changeup. So it's a splitter that has a little changeup tendencies. So there you go. That's the one that they taught him that the Cubs did not for Jeremiah Estrada. They've got 7 great arms in that bullpen. And they're, you know, Joe Musgrove is coming back now. We know what Dylan Cease has done. They're doing all of this, by the way, with Yu Darvish nowhere. With Yu Darvish, for personal reasons, being away from the team. And there was a report that Yu Darvish may not actually be coming back. So, I mean, it's kind of amazing that they're getting it done. But they've made so many deals for starting pitchers. I don't know if A.J. Preller is being a GM for his job, if he's GMing for his job. That's been one of the rumors out there. But my goodness, the Padres are on an incredible heater. And I put some money on them at plus 3,000 to win the World Series just at the deadline. As soon as they made those trades, I was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and do that because because that bullpen mix is filthy. And what an effect on a team to know your bullpen is that dominant. Luis Arraez was quoted about it and said, the offense has been great, the resiliency is great, but, quote, we have the best relievers in the game. Knowing that makes them more relaxed, and we know that confidence can breed success. Pretty awesome stuff going on in baseball right now. Cleveland and Minnesota in a big-time series of consequence in the American League Central. There's a lot of good stuff going on. Texter asking, hey, Speaks, I wasn't able to catch all of Mully and Hall with Chris Getz. Did either of them ask where Tony La Russa fits in and how much influence he has? Yes, they did. That text from General Confusion. Salute. They did. It was a really good interview. I thought those guys were terrific with Chris Getz. And they did ask him what role Tony has. Is he basically Kenny Williams at this point? And Getz said, no, he's not. So he said that he just asks him for advice sometimes, and he doesn't listen to him. I have the final answer, said Chris Getz. Sometimes I listen to Tony, and it has an effect days or weeks later. Sometimes I don't, et cetera, that Tony's just there as an advisor. So the day off today for the Cubs and the White Sox, just an outrageous, outrageous occurrence. I am told that it is the first time the Cubs have had a scheduled day off since 1932 on a Sunday. They've had other Sundays off because of makeup situations or weird things, but not since 1932 have the Cubs had a scheduled Sunday day off. And looking back at that roster, I can say with pretty calm assurance that Gabby Hartnett probably hosted everyone for a barbecue. Because Gabby was that kind of guy. Gabby Hartnett later had a bowling alley on the Northwest Side, owned a bowling alley for decades on the Northwest Side. He enjoyed a festive gathering. You know what I mean? I'm borrowing this from my pal Len Casper, who says that Nellie Fox, he's pretty sure, hosted a barbecue in 1954, the last time the White Sox had a scheduled Sunday day off.
10 for World War II as well, too, because obviously that happened before World War II.
Yeah, well before World War II.
Right. So it's crazy to think the Cubs have had less off days since World War II.
It's great. So really the question then becomes, who is most likely to be hosting their ball clubs for a barbecue today? You know, it would have been a John Lester job when he was here. He hosted gatherings all the time. Which Cub is most likely to be hosting a barbecue today? This is the kind of topics that you get in at 11:53 as you're getting ready for Rami Makhlouf's show here. But believe me, I'll bring it back for Parkins and Spiegel today. All right, tomorrow, I should say. So
my money's on Swanson. That'd be my pick.
Dansby Swanson, yeah, in the basement. Celebrate the celebrate the women's Olympic gold at the same time. We're having an Olympic closing ceremonies party as well as a Sunday off day party. That's a good guess that it would be Swanson. For the White Sox, I think it's Nicky Lopez.
I think it has to be Nicky. I don't think I can name another player.
You can't name another player on the White Sox?
I can.
You should
Luis
be able
Roberts
to.
There.
You should be able to.
Is Lory Garcia point. Still here?
He's not. He's not still here. So, yeah, there you go. What a fun show this has been here on Hit and Run. Thank you to our guest on the show, Steve Stone. We didn't need any other guests. It's 3 hours. We don't need one. And, you know, we don't just have one producer. We have two. Yeah, that's right. We have an associate producer. Whether he gets paid or not, he works here.
I'm underage for a job.
Stop alerting the powers that be.
All right, I'll delete it from the FCC.
Please delete it. Thank you so much to all the listeners, all the callers, all the texters. Thank you so much to everyone for hanging out. Thank you to Sean Sears. Thank you to Ruben Spiegel. Thank you to Mitch Rosen for the fine work that he does, the executive producer of this radio station. Parkins and Spiegel's going to be hopping all week. Highly recommend listening all week long. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Rami Makhlouf is next on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.